All right, here we go, Wrestling with Theology fans. This is Pastor Doug Minton here to dig deeper with you into the book of Revelation. This week we begin chapter 8, but we have both a beginning and an ending here, as we have the seventh seal being opened, finishing off the vision of the seals, but also a new chapter. And before we get into our text this morning, I have said before that Revelation is the one book in the Bible which references all the other books in the scriptures. As we've gone through the first seven chapters, we have referenced 49 of the other 65 books in the Bible. We have also referenced 10 other extra-biblical sources, whether from the Apocrypha or the Pseudepigrapha. So we have seen a lot of external attestation to what is going on here in the book of Revelation. So now we have the seventh seal being opened in Revelation chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. And another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints rose before God from the hand of the angel. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth. And there were peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. So far our text for this week. Again, we have the seventh seal being opened, but not only new chapter, but also getting ready to go into these seven trumpets as we see them getting the trumpets, as we'll talk about in a moment. But as we get to the seventh seal, we look to Echumenius as we have for the originals, for the first six seals, not the original, but the first six seals, and his off the wall, to use my own terminology and thoughts, description of and interpretation of the seals. The loosing of the seventh seal affects the most perfect and complete glory for us. No longer is there as before the loosing of sin and our turning to God or God's turning to us. Rather, there is now the most unspeakable blessings, to be called sons of God, to be inheritors of God, to be co-heirs with Christ, to be brother and friends and children of Christ, also to rule with him and to be glorified with him, and those blessings that eye has not seen, nor has ear heard, nor has come into the heart of man. 1 Corinthians 2:9. And what is the loosing of the seventh seal? It is the second coming of Christ and the giving of blessings as rewards. For although some are handed over to the punishment of sinners, nonetheless, it is the aim of Christ and the intention of the incarnation that everyone become an heir of his kingdom. Therefore, when the seventh seal was loosed, there was, it says, silence for about half an hour, since the King of creation was coming, and every angelic and supernatural power, astounded at the exceeding greatness of the glory of him who was coming, for that reason became silent. Now, as we've seen before, when talking about the first six seals, Echumenius sees this not as a description of judgment, as almost everybody else in all of church history has done, but as revelation of the gospel. So we have the seventh seal being the second coming of Jesus, where, yes, there is silence because everyone is awestruck over the glory of the Son of Man coming down. Tychonius takes reference to the words that there was silence in heaven, meaning that in the church, the silence for half an hour shows the beginning of eternal rest. So Tychonius has this idea that there is the eternal rest in this silence for a half hour. Dr. Brighton says, perhaps Revelation 8:1 does not refer directly to the eternal heavenly rest to be initiated at the end of the present world, but it is nevertheless similar to the silence which preceded God's original creation according to an intertestamental Jewish tradition. According to this tradition, there was a silence before God spoke and thus created light, Genesis 1:3. 4 Ezra 6:39 says that darkness and silence covered everything before God commanded light to appear. According to 2 Baruch 3:7, at the original creation there was silence. Back in 4 Ezra, this time chapter 7, verses 30 to 36, there will be a primeval silence, like that of the first creation, which will precede the resurrection and the judgment of the end. Noting also 2 Baruch 3, verses 5 through 9. In the Wisdom of Solomon, in the Apocrypha, chapter 18, verses 14 to 19, a silence and peaceful rest preceded the angel of death's descent from heaven to strike the doomed land. Now we got all these things going on. and want to take a look at these verses that Dr. Brighton shows up. First of all, 4th Ezra 6, 38 to 40. I said, O Lord, you spoke at the beginning of creation and said on the first day, let heaven and earth be made, and your word accomplished the work. And then the Spirit was hovering, and darkness and silence embraced everything. The sound of man's voice was not yet there. Then you commanded that a ray of light be brought forth from your treasuries, so that your works might then appear. 2 Baruch 3, 9, or 3, verses 5 through 9. For if you destroy your city and deliver up your country to those who hate us, how will the name of Israel be remembered again? Or how shall we speak again about your glorious deeds? Or to whom again will that which is in your law be explained? Or will the universe return to its nature and the world go back to its original silence? And will the multitude of the souls be taken away, and will not the nature of man be mentioned again? And where is all that which you said to Moses about us? Some great questions for God, as this is to be Baruch, which would be Jeremiah's scribe at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem. If all of this happens, God, here are all these questions that need to be asked. Will everything just go back to the way it was before creation? Going back to 4th Ezra, this time chapter 7, verses 30 to 35. And the world shall be turned back to primeval silence for 7 days, as it was at the first beginnings, so that no one shall be left. And after 7 days, the world which is not yet awake shall be roused, and that which is corruptible shall perish. And the earth shall give up those who are asleep in it, and the chambers shall give up the souls which have been committed to them. And the Most High shall be revealed upon the seat of judgment, and comparison shall pass away, and patience shall be withdrawn. But judgment alone shall remain, truth shall stand, and faithfulness shall go strong. And recompense shall follow, and the reward shall be manifested. Righteous deeds shall awake, and unrighteous deeds shall not sleep. So these questions that 2 Baruch asks are answered in the affirmative by 4th Ezra. And now both of these are pseudepigraphical works that come from possibly as early as the 2nd century BC up to possibly even the 2nd century AD. Which, again, if we have John receiving the revelation right around 100, we're going earlier in that time frame for both of these. Now, the wisdom of Solomon coming from the Apocrypha, chapter 18, verses 14 to 19. For while all things were in quiet silence, and that night was in the midst of her swift course, thine almighty word leaped down from heaven out of thy royal throne, as a fierce man of war into the midst of a land of destruction, and brought thine unfeigned commandment as a sharp sword, and standing up filled all things with death, and it touched the heaven, and it stood upon the earth. Now suddenly visions of horrible dreams troubled them sore, and terrors came upon them unlooked for. And one thrown here and another there, half dead, showed the cause of his death. For the dreams that troubled them did foreshow this, lest they should perish and not know why they were afflicted. So here we have Solomon also talking about, in some sense, referencing back to the Egyptians, but then also looking at all of those who have stood up against the people of Israel in their time. We also have, in these moments of silence, references in the scriptures. Habakkuk 2:20, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Zephaniah 1:7, be silent before the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is near. The Lord has prepared a sacrifice and consecrated his guest. And most notably, Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. So this idea of silence is there. We move on to verse 2. Then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. So we now have seven angels being given seven trumpets, which in verse 6 of this chapter, next week, we will look at the beginning of the judgments in the trumpets. But these seven angels are starting off here as we see this idea of the seals going off into the rest of the revelation. Dr. Brighton says, the article before seven angels indicates that this group of angels is well known to John and his readers, either from their common religious background or from a previous reference in Revelation to a group of seven angels. So what does this mean? This is either the seven archangels that are written about in the book of Sirach and other places in First Enoch. Or it could be, as Dr. Brighton, I believe, continues on, is that it is the seven angels of the seven churches with which the original copy of Revelation is sent. We look at a couple of these issues of the seven angels, the being there, especially if we're talking about the archangels, because we have Tobit 12:12-15. Now therefore, when thou didst pray, and Sarah thy daughter-in-law, I did bring the remembrance of your prayers before the Holy One. And when thou didst bury the dead, I was with thee likewise. And when thou didst not delay to rise up and leave thy dinner to go and cover the dead, thy good deed was not hid from me, but I was with thee. And now God hath sent me to heal thee and Sarah thy daughter-in-law. I am Raphael, one of the seven holy angels, which present the prayers of the saints, and which go in and out before the glory of the Holy One. So here is Raphael talking about being one of the seven angels that stand before God. All seven are named in 1 Enoch chapter 20. These are the names of the holy angels who watch. Suruel, one of the holy angels, for he is of eternity and of trembling. Raphael, one of the holy angels, for he is of the spirits of man. Raguel, one of the holy angels who take vengeance for the world and for the luminaries. Michael, one of the holy angels, for he is obedient in his benevolence over the people and the nations. Sarakael, one of the holy angels who are set over the spirit of mankind who sin in the spirit. Gabriel, one of the holy angels who oversee the Garden of Eden and the serpents and the cherubim. Now, one of the first times we have archangels showing up, and actually there's only two times that it shows up in the New Testament, is 1 Thessalonians 4:16, talking about Jesus coming back. And the Lord himself will descend from heaven with the cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet of God. Jude 9 also has this. But when the archangel Michael, contending with the devil, was disputing about the body of Moses, he did not presume to pronounce a blasphemous judgment, but said, "The Lord rebuke you." All right, here's the idea of the seven archangels and the history we have of these things. But there's also talk about the angel of the presence. In Isaiah 63:9, in all their affliction he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity he redeemed them. He lifted them up and carried them all the days of old. Of course, speaking of the Lord carrying Israel throughout their history. And this is promised in Exodus 33, verse 14. My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. In the book of Jubilees, chapter 1, beginning of verse 27, God said to the angel of the presence, write for Moses from the beginning of creation till my sanctuary has been built among them for all eternity. And the Lord will appear to the eyes of all, and all shall know that I am the God of Israel, and the father of all the children of Jacob, and king on Mount Zion for all eternity. For Zion and Jerusalem shall be holy. And the angel of the presence who went before the camp of Israel took the tables of the divisions of the years from the time of the creation of the law and of the testimony of the weeks of the jubilees according to the individual years, according to all the number of the jubilees according to the individual years, from the day of the new creation when the heavens and the earth shall be renewed and all their creation according to the powers of heaven and according to all the creation of the earth until the sanctuary of the Lord shall be made in Jerusalem on Mount Zion and all the luminaries be renewed for healing and for peace and for blessing and for all the elect of Israel, and thus it may be from that day and unto all the days of the earth. So we have this idea of the angel of the presence being here as being one of those very important created beings, those very important angels. And now we have the trumpets which come up, and we have trumpets all throughout the Old Testament because the trumpets signal for battle and for announcements. They were not, as they are now, a type of entertainment. They were not used as musical instruments as we have today. They were used for very important governmental type things. Those of, again, calling for battle readiness, calling for the warning of an invasion, calling for all of these things. Now we have Dr. McGee and his dispensational idea on the trumpets. The seven trumpets of Revelation will likewise have the positive effect of moving Israel into the land of Palestine. I believe that it will take these seven trumpets to get all of Israel back into that land. This is another reason I do not believe their present return to the land is a fulfillment of prophecy. Rather, it will be fulfilled in the Great Tribulation with the blowing of the seven trumpets as they were on the wilderness march. After the seventh trumpet, Israel is identified for us in chapter 12 as the special object of God's protection. So we have, in the dispensational view, some disagree with this, but some will take the 1948 establishment of the State of Israel as being a fulfillment of the prophecy. Dr. McGee says he doesn't personally believe this. This is not going to happen until the Great Tribulation. And it's going to take all seven trumpets to get all of Israel back into Palestine. And that becomes the problem with dispensational thinking, is that we have to have certain things happen before God can do his work. That we have to do certain things, which is why there is such a great push among dispensationalists for Christian Zionism, which is the establishment of Israel and the bringing of all the Jews back to Israel. So that once all the Jews are back in Israel, then for some, the rapture will happen and the Christians will be taken up and the Jews will have to deal with the rest of Revelation. For others, it's just, well, let's just put them back into a place where they belong. Because, well, God says this will be your land, your inheritance as a perpetual covenant. But again, this all goes into what does Israel mean? Especially when we get to Israel in the New Testament. It is not the 12 tribes that descend from the 12 sons of Jacob anymore. It is the true, faithful people of God. So Paul can say in Romans that not all Israel is Israel. That not everyone who is physically descended from Abraham is automatically saved because of their heritage. But it is those who truly believe in the one that Jacob wrestled with. The one that brings us to the name of our podcast in the first place, Wrestling with Theology. Because this is what we do, especially as we get into Revelation. But I'm digressing down a rabbit hole a little too far, maybe. But we have this idea of all these things that we have to do before Jesus can come back. No, because if we had all of these things to do before Jesus comes back, Jesus would not say that the kingdom of God will come as a thief in the night, that his return will be in a moment, in an instant, in the twinkling of an eye. We would know because, well, we've done all the things on the checklist, so now we just have to sit and wait. That's not the way Jesus talks about the kingdom of heaven coming into the world and for the final judgment. He talks about us watching, not waiting, watching for the signs of the kingdom coming, watching for his return, not being asleep, but being awake. And so then we have another angel, an eighth angel in this passage here, that comes and stands before the altar of incense in heaven, gathering up much incense to offer with the prayers of the saints. As we talk about in Psalm 141, verse 2, let my prayer rise before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. So we have this here. And then he takes the censer, filling it with fire and casting it to the earth. And there are peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. Dr. Brighton says, balo, the word here, literally means to throw or cast. Here it seems to bear the sense of pour out. Hence his translation of empty, that he emptied the censer out onto the earth. That this is not just, he just hurls it down like a javelin or a spear, but it's poured out. Then he says, the angel takes fire from the altar and pours it out on the earth. And the results of this action continue after the angels sound their trumpets and initiate the scenes of the second earthly vision. The angel fills his censer with the fire and pours it out upon the earth. The trumpet angels then begin their mediation of the scenes, while the other angel, bit by bit, continues to pour out the fire on earth. He continues to pour out his censer, having filled it once from the altar, while the seven angels, one after the other, blow their trumpets. So Dr. Brighton paints this picture from Revelation that this eighth angel that has this fire from the altar of incense in heaven and is just slowly pouring it out over the course of all of the seven trumpets. And it's been a while since I've been to that part of Dr. Brighton's commentary, since the last time I taught Revelation more than a decade ago. And I believe he picks this up when we get to the seventh trumpet again, picks up this image, bringing us back to this point. But that's still a couple of months down the road before we get through all seven angels. Because again, like with the seven seals, like we've had for the last few weeks, there is an interlude between trumpet six and trumpet seven. So there's an extended period there that becomes very important, just like chapter seven was very important to the understanding of Revelation. But that's all in the future. Right now, we focus on the fact that we have the seven trumpet angels having been given their trumpets, and now they are preparing to sound. And we'll see the results of these soundings, these judgments that are brought upon the earth through the trumpets over the next couple of months, so that we may truly understand what it is that is going on in Revelation. Let me truly know that God is not leaving us without warning, that God is bringing us that word. Well, that's it for this week. This is Pastor Doug Minton thanking you for being here and digging deeper into Revelation chapter 8 with me. Come back next week. We start the seven trumpets, and we will see the great things that God has for us there. Till then, may God's richest blessings be upon you as you, like Jacob, wrestle with the theology that is around you. Amen.